Center for Action and Contemplation presents Hell No with Father Richard Rohr. This talk was presented as part of CAC's Conspire Conference in 2014.
Well, welcome back, those of you who were here last year, and welcome for the first time, those of you who have come. And what's happening in your lifetime like no other is that cosmology, the shape of the universe, is becoming the shape of theology. And we're realizing we have to have a God that is at least as big as that. And largely, we don't. We were trained, because that's where history was, it's nobody's fault, but in a largely tribal religion, tribal God. And as I'll try to make clear, he was largely reduced to a problem-solving God. We didn't start with glory. We didn't start with yes, as I like to say. And even as Genesis does. You know, six times in a row, the creation story in Genesis says, and it was good, and it was good, and it was good, and it was good, and it was good. But we didn't get it. And in fact, what I'm going to talk about this hour, I hope it doesn't make some of you run out of the room, I'm going to talk about hell. I'm going to give you hell. Because quite frankly, until we clear this away, and I mean clear it away, it is not a benevolent universe. It's not even, as many secular people today would think, an indifferent universe, but it's a hostile universe that's dangerous. The shape of God is the shape of reality, and the shape of reality is the shape of God. If you want to use the word reality instead of God, that doesn't bother me. I don't think God is upset about getting his name right or her name right. And yet, that's what we've fought about, because that's what tribal religion does. And again, I'm not here to blame the past. That's where the evolution of consciousness was. At what Ken Wilber calls the red level, the tribal level, the power level, and 30% of our earth is still there. But a whole bunch of people, not even realizing it, have moved beyond that. And they find it very hard to fit their notion of God, their notion of the divine, into what we now know about the nature of the universe. We have to have a God at least that big, and presumably bigger. I don't think that's the God most of us were given. Now, that doesn't mean it was wrong, or you're going to hell, or you're lost, but we can rather, I think, easily clear away the dust and the debris. And that's what I'm going to try to do. I've got enough here for a whole weekend, so I pray that I can at least make it concise enough that it can make sense to you. There's a number of books coming out recently. John Sweeney came out with a marvelous book, Inventing Hell. And he blames an awful lot of what we're left with now on Dante, the Inferno and the Purgatorio. And he makes a very strong case that the imagery that has influenced the Western psyche for 800 years is not the imagery of the Bible, but the imagery of Dante. I had to study the Divine Comedy in college. I mean, it's great Italian poetry. Is it good theology? In some ways it is, but in some ways it surely isn't. And if you go to the cathedrals of Europe, this is the art, the Sistine Chapel itself. Is a threatening God, not an inviting God, not an alluring God, not a revealing God, but a threatening God. Now, brothers and sisters, when you have a threatening God, it's not a safe universe. We all pull into a small world of self-protectiveness. And even the gospel itself got disguised, and I'm going to use the word disguised, in a low-level win-lose contest. That if we were true to our own criteria of almost every denomination you were raised in, very, very few people won. Hardly anybody. So it's a loser script, and not loser the way Jesus defines it, but simply a world that is apparently largely, I would say 95% of what God has created has, by our definition, been abhorrent to God, unacceptable, unworthy. We have a God problem. We either have two different gods. I am going to read from my notes here in several cases. I know I like to talk impromptu, but some of these formulations, I can't say I'm wrong, because I know your minds are just going to go, and you're all preconditioned by a storyline that I don't think is even the biblical storyline. You do know the word hell is not mentioned in the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, not once. Do you know Paul never once uses the word hell? Do you know John never once uses the word hell? How did this become the big story? Well, I'm convinced that the ego at its lower levels and consciousness at its lower levels is very attracted to win-lose paradigms. It just excites people. I don't know why. Watch them at American Idol or at a football game. I had mass this morning in Albuquerque, and God bless the ushers. They're good, good men. I'm not putting them down, but you know, all they wanted to talk to me about as I'm about to go up to the altar was the football scores. You know, totally into it. You know, you frame anything in terms of win lose, and particularly the male of the species is invested. You move out of it, like a lot of people say, well, you throw out hell, everybody's just going to do what they want. And that's what low-level consciousness would obviously say. So we've got two different gods. One, apparently, before we die, and another one after we die. It's two different stories. Or we have a God who whimsically seems to change his or her mind. The God before we died, that we believe in, I guess, tells us to love our neighbor as ourself. But apparently he doesn't. I'm using the word he because that was the imagery up to now. We're always grabbing for metaphors, and you've all heard me say this probably too much, but the only language available to religion is metaphor. Just get that clear to begin with. There's no other possible language. All words are metaphors approximating the hard knock of reality itself. And religion didn't have the humility to know that, that its words were metaphorical. That doesn't mean we throw them out. Quite the contrary. If we'd been more like our Jewish ancestors, they studied the scriptures in a way that they called midrash. Perhaps you've heard that term, where you struggled with the text. You unravel the text. You said, it could mean this, it could mean that. You ate it up, and you let it eat you up. But we came along with this really only fully after the Enlightenment in the 17th century, when we wanted to compete with the rational, intelligent thinkers of Europe. We wanted to be smart too. So we said, there's one interpretation of Scripture. And most of the Protestant Reformation happened in that period. It's no surprise there are 30,000 Protestant denominations because they all seem to think we're going to agree on words. That's why the Word became flesh. To reveal that lie to begin with, that words can't get you there, only experience can.